Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 3 hours. We've got some interesting interviews, as we always do, between 2 and 3. We've got Jan from MyRag, or Mulgrave Residents Action Group, coming in to tell us what they're up to at the moment. And between 1 and 2, we've got Cindy McLeish, our local MP, to come in and tell us what's going on in the community. And it's my pleasure to introduce now a man that we've had before, and we'd like to talk to him and find out what's going on. His name's Greg, and we refer to him as the Mr. B-Man. Welcome, Greg.
Good afternoon, Alan. Great to be here.
Great to have you too. Now, there are a couple of things I want to cover with you. First of all, what's the most active... Is there a more active time of the year than others for bees? Like, do they hibernate at times, or what happens?
Great question. The answer is yes and yes.
Go for it.
All right. The most active time for bees, as a generalisation, is from late spring until early autumn. That's when they're out and about being busy little bees that we see in our gardens.
And the heat doesn't worry them? Like, they don't drop off on the days of 35, 40 degrees?
Usually not. Bees are amazing creatures. Please don't start me. I'll wear your ears off.
No, you're not going to do that.
Bees have this amazing ability to regulate the temperature inside their hive. So I always equate the hive as, think of the hive like your own home.
Yep.
When it gets too hot, you open windows.
Yeah, but hives can't open windows, can they?
I'm glad you mentioned that. They don't. Did you know? Oh, sorry, this is another one I'm famous for, the old did you knows.
Yeah.
Bees are the inventors of evaporative cooling. Oh, there. That one stopped Alan in his tracks, folks.
So I'm just trying to get, like, they're in their hives.
Yep.
So how do they get cool in there?
Okay. Bees will find a source of water.
Right.
The bees that are responsible for keeping the temperature in the hive even will go and collect a whole lot of water. They will then go to the entrance of the hive.
Right.
They will face outwards, just inside the entrance to the hive.
Right.
And then they will start to blow bubbles with the water they've collected. Simultaneously, they will be fanning their wings to create a draft. So, you have water being evaporated with a draft going into the hive. That's what evaporative cooling is. And they will regulate the temperature inside the hive to approximately 35 degrees, give or take, irrespective of the external temperature.
Now, I'm amazed. So there are a couple of questions I want to come out of that. And the first one being, so you said the ones that are responsible for keeping the hive cool. Yep. Is that all they do, or do they still go off and get the nectar?
They will still forage.
You're right.
But on these particular days, it'll be a division of labour. Don't ask me how it works, because no scientist...
Oh, that was going to be the next question. How do they decide which ones?
Ask a scientist, and they will also give you 7 different answers.
Yep.
I have no idea how they know, but they intrinsically know. Oh, hive's getting a bit too warm. We better cool it off. Okay, guys, go get some water. Sorry, girls. Go get some water. We need a bit of cooling in here. And that's what they do. And there's no one bee that says, you know, blows the whistle and says, water time. It's just a collective wisdom of the hive.
So somewhere along the line, they've got a bit of an upper echelon, so haven't they? Because some do this and some do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we don't know how they work that out, then, obviously, do we?
Not exactly. I've heard some people who are far cleverer than I say it's like a DNA imprint on the bees, because there is no hierarchy of structure in terms of who tells them to do what.
But the queen bee is the boss, though, isn't she?
Not really.
Isn't she? I thought she was the boss of the hive.
Not really. I mean, she's integral to the hive.
Yep.
But she doesn't direct what everybody does.
Doesn't she?
No. Surprise.
Yeah, you've got me surprised there.
All right, I'll give you an example. When a new baby bee is born, so it's chewing its way out of this little comb.
Right.
And as it comes out, the first thing it does is groom itself, then turns around and cleans the bits of cocoon left in the cell where it's just come from.
Right.
Now, no one says, oh, your room's a bit dirty, go back in there and clean it. That's what they do. And then that bee then becomes what they call a nurse bee. for the first 3 weeks of her life. So she doesn't leave the hive for 3 weeks. She is maintaining and doing all the organisational cleaning duties, looking after the queen, all sorts of interior stuff inside the hive. So it's not until the new bee is 3 weeks old where she ventures outside for the first time.
I find that amazing. I find that amazing that there's a... While there isn't a structure, there is a structure because they each know what they have to do.
That's right. And they progress through their various tasks or duties within the hive without anyone sort of pulling up to them with a worksheet saying, oh, by the way, as from tomorrow you're going to be doing this. It all depends on what is required in the hive for the benefit of the hive as an entire organism.
So how many bees would roughly be in one of your hives, just roughly?
As an approximation, anywhere between 30 and 60,000.
Well, now, most questions are going to ask, do you ever count them? Well, obviously you don't when you've got numbers like that.
One can do an approximation, but one of my corny granddad jokes is, I have a really good relationship with my bees and I name each and every one of them.
So what I'm trying to get at with these bees that we're talking about, the ones that are, what you say, 3 weeks old?
Yeah,
3 weeks old. How do we know that they all find their way back home? Well, we wouldn't if you've got that many in a hive. I mean, some could get lost. Anything could happen, couldn't it?
It's possible, but that's not what normally happens. Okay, here's the scenario. A bee's been inside, just born, has first 3 weeks of home duties, and now it's going to go out into the big, brave world to do the supporting of the hive survival from a food perspective.
Right.
So it's going to go out and gather food, whether that be pollen or nectar, or in cases, water.
Yep.
The first time that a bee leaves the hive, it doesn't just sort of go zipping out the front door and off into the wild blue yonder on a, you know, an expedition. The first thing the bee does is locate its situation according to GPS.
Oh, so
that inbuilt GPS that a bee's got. So when a bee goes out for the first time, usually it's between 10 and 2, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Right.
They will then do almost like figure eights in front of the hive. Now, these are increasing in size.
Yep.
Or they can do big loops. They might fly, you know, 10, 15 metres away from the hive and then return. And that whole time, they're setting their location according to their inbuilt GPS within their lovely little brains.
So
that when they go away from the hive, they know where home is.
Animals surprise me, particularly the bees. But, I mean, cats seem to have that sort of... bit of a built-in, because they, you know, some of them will get lost and they might be gone 6 months, but they find their way home again.
Yeah.
Got to take a quick break and we've got more for Greg.
A winter's day in a deep and dark December. Freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. Friendship causes pain. It's laughter and it's loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an island. Don't talk of love. I am a rock, I am an island.
and an island never cries.
You're listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And I'm talking to Greg, and Greg's an expert on bees. He knows all about bees. First of all, Greg, are the numbers of bees on the up? Are we finding more? Because I know for a while there we were getting really worried that the bee numbers were starting to decline and decline quite rapidly. Are they on the up? Are they stable? Or are they still on the downslide?
I'm going to give you a couple of different answers. I'm sorry, Alan.
Yep.
Bee numbers were declining on a worldwide basis.
Yep.
But not so much in Australia. And the reason for that was the dreaded varroa mite overseas,
yep.
Which was decimating bee populations worldwide.
Yep.
For example, in the last season in North America, through the winter, they lost approximately 60 to 70% of their hives over winter.
Gee, that's a lot.
Yeah, so they've got that real cycle because the hives are so weakened by the parasite, they don't make it through the winter.
So how do you increase the numbers? Because obviously, I mean, most of our food relies on these little critters, mm-hmm. and we can't afford to lose them. But how do you get the numbers up?
It's called splitting the hives in springtime.
Right.
The numbers of bees in hives generally increase fairly rapidly going into springtime.
Right.
So they've been through the quiet period of winter,
yep.
where it's in almost a dormancy. Then the queen starts laying because there's going to be more food. They need more bees. Yep. And so the queen responds to that. Now, bear in mind, she hasn't been outside. She doesn't get a weather forecast.
She doesn't get out at all, does she?
No.
Yep.
But the hive intrinsically knows good times are coming. We need more bees. Crack to it, Her Majesty. So she'll increase her laying, therefore increasing the number of bees, and away we go. So when your bee numbers have increased really rapidly, you can do what we call a split of a hive that's really booming along.
Yep.
You can split it into two.
So, but my understanding was you've got to have a queen bee.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've taken out half, you can't split the queen bee in half.
No.
So how do you then get another queen bee for the next hive?
Okay, beekeeping 107 goes something along these lines.
Yeah.
The queen is going to remain in one half of the hive, of the two boxes. So in the box that's empty, you make sure that in there is some fairly new eggs that have just been laid by the queen.
Yeah.
When the eggs are less than 4 days old and the hive knows collectively that in this box we don't have a queen, we need one, they will then take the steps to create a new queen from a newly laid egg. Once again, don't ask me how it works. It's a DNA imprint. It's like, oh my goodness, we don't have a queen. Emergency response number one.
Right.
So they'll create the new queen from a newly laid egg. And the way they do that is by feeding it superfood.
All right. So, Greg, I need to keep moving on because we do have to finish by 12:45. The other thing I want to ask you, and I've had a few people say to me after I've done interviews with you, I kill a lot of these things because they can't pick the difference between a bee and a wasp.
Mm-hmm.
So for the listeners who are out there now that are listening to this and that are saying, I often kill them, but because I don't, how are they going to identify a wasp?
Oh, well, we'll just talk about the European wasp, the one we all dislike and intensely.
Yeah.
It can be really, really difficult because they're similar in size, their colourings are similar, and to the untrained eye, they're identical. They're an orange and brown or orange and black flying insect about this size, and I don't like it. So it's quite, I understand where people can't differentiate. One of the things I ask people is, all right, this insect that you're worried about, how is it flying and where is it flying? Is it flying around close to the ground, just a few inches above the ground? If they say yes, I'll say 99% that will be a European wasp. because they're predators. They're looking for protein. That can be an insect on the ground, anything, or anything on the ground that they can scavenge.
Yep.
So that's test number one. But the exception there is if you've got a lot of clover, for example, in your lawn, will there be a lot of bees flying close to the ground because they're going down to the clover flowers? So it's not a cut and dried, well, you do this and that will give you a definitive answer.
Yep.
So the first thing is it flying close to the ground? The other one that I ask, how is it flying? Right. Is it flying in a soft, almost like a... not quite circular, but a really soft side-to-side, or is it slightly jerking?
Yep.
Okay. Bees, watch your flowers and watch how bees fly around flowers. It's a really lovely, methodical, soothing way of flying, whereas the wasp won't be at all interested in flowers, and it's more or less darting around a bit. So it's a slightly different flight pattern. They're the two primary things.
Fair enough. All right, I've got to take one quick break and then we want to come back and talk some more to Greg. Talking to Greg. I keep getting anxious to go. Greg, I want to keep on talking. Now I'm talking to Greg, our Mr. Bee Man. Greg, you said before something about in a good season. So what do you classify as a good season? Are you talking about the amount of honey you get, or I just don't quite know what you justify as a good season?
All right. Can I just go back one step?
Yeah.
Beekeeping is basically primary production. All right.
Yeah.
You're dealing with livestock, believe it or not. That's what bees are classified as.
Yep.
So it's a weather-dependent exercise.
Yep.
For example, not this season, but the previous two seasons, the weather was not consistent. The one before last, we had 1 week of springtime.
Yep.
And then we had winter again up until the end of November.
Yep.
So August, we had one good week, and everyone, myself included, said, oh, good, spring break's here, we're off and running. And then we had winter for the next 7 or 8 weeks.
Yep.
Now, that puts a real stress on the bees because the queen has already started laying more eggs to create more bees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
But with that terrible weather that we had, constant rain, wind, things were flowering, but because the rain was so heavy, the food that the bees rely on, that is the nectar and the pollen and the flowers, was being washed off. So on a good day, you know, we've had 2 or 3 days of rain, there's a good day, the bees come hurtling out looking for food because everybody's hungry and there's not much left in the pantry in terms of their food stores.
Yeah.
So they go to the flowers. There's no food.
No food.
It's all been washed off. So it'd be like you and I going to a supermarket for our weekly shop. We go in and there's absolutely nothing anywhere. There's nothing on the shelves anywhere.
Yeah.
So then it creates a bit of a panic. Hell, we better find some. So then it becomes a bit of a frenzy for the bees trying to find food. And in that season, that's 3 years ago, a lot of hives in the Yarra Valley died of starvation. And I'm, and I must confess, you call me an expert and I shudder whenever you say that. I'm just a guy who knows a bit about bees.
Yep. You know a lot.
Yeah, but so do most other beekeepers. I'm just one that happens to talk a lot. I also lost a hive through starvation. I thought, oh, no, they'll be all right. I left them plenty of honey before winter, so they should be all right. No, they weren't. I misjudged. And so they ran out of food. There was no more food. The hive starved.
Just died.
It died.
All right, so in a let's stick with this just for a minute. So in a good year, I mean, they go to your garden and next door's garden and a few down the road and they get as much as they need. In a case like that where it's desperation, how far would they fly from the hive? Will they go kilometres or don't have that ability?
I don't. Once again, it depends on which expert you read or listen to. I've heard figures of 5, 7, and 10 kilometres from the hive to find food.
So I'm just trying to get that. So why didn't that hive of yours, why didn't they go far enough to get food?
It has a lot to do with where I am.
Right.
I'm on a rural property.
Yep.
And where I am, I'm surrounded. Excuse me, I. Pardon me. Where I am. And again, all I've got is native gum trees.
Yep.
There's no domestic gardens at all.
Yep.
Okay. So I am totally reliant on whatever's flowering.
Yep.
Now, if there's only two sources of food, that is two sorts of gum trees, and they've all been cleaned out by rain, there's nowhere else for them to go. It doesn't matter how far they go.
But they wouldn't go down as far as Lilydale or something like that.
No, not from where I am.
Yep.
Because once again, you've got to think they're running very low on food.
Yep.
So they've got to try and conserve as much energy as they can.
Yep.
While still foraging.
Yep.
For example, let's say you and I, our pantry is bare. We've got to go and get some food.
Yep.
The nearest supermarket is 7 kilometres away. So you've got to walk down to the supermarket with a backpack, find whatever food you can, and walk back to home, put it in the pantry, then go out and do it again, and again, and again, to try and get enough, not just to sustain yourself, but to sustain and improve the whole hive.
The whole hive,
Yeah.
And they just couldn't go that far.
Well, there was just nothing where I am. In any direction, there was no food source for
them.
But
then the other, so how many hives did you have at that stage?
Now at that stage, I had 10.
All right, so, but the other 9 still found enough in the area, but the 10th one just couldn't sustain it.
Yep. I think there's a couple of things that happened there. I'm a very conservative beekeeper, right. in the amount of honey I take from my hives.
Right.
Because honey production was one of the last things on my mind when I started beekeeping.
Yep.
So I am very, very conservative. I leave a huge amount of honey in the hive. I have other beekeepers say, well, you could have taken that. And the answer is, yes, I could have. But those 2 years that I didn't saved 9 out of 10 hives. Because I left them sufficient food for worst-case scenario.
Yep. All right, so you've got 10 of them, I think. You say, or you had 10 of those.
Yep.
So on a good year, how much would you expect to get out of each hive?
Once again, it depends.
I knew
Sorry.
You were going to say that.
Yep. Let's say what we would regard as an average season, you would expect in one hive anything, depending on the beekeeper, between 20 to 40, sometimes more, kilos of honey per hive.
I've got to go. Greg, so do you want to give out your phone number for anybody who wants to find out more about beekeeping?
Yep. My number is, you ready, pencil at the handy, folks? Here we go. 0414 673 592.
0414 673 592.
That's it.
And I guess you're happy to help anybody get into beekeeping.
Yep, by all means.
Gotta go. Greg, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.